that look okay to you?
All right.
Okay,
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Well, this is my okay. little recorder. I'm just going to say the date. So today's date is Thursday, the 20th of January, approximately 3 p.m., and it's Bridget Brownlow here interviewing, gratefully interviewing Don Harper about his recollections of some earlier days at the university. So, Don, if we could, you could state your full name, please, to start.
Donald Francis Harper.
Oh, great. Well, Francis is my son's middle name, so I love that name. And my favorite saint, too, Donald Francis Harper. And your place and date of birth?
Moncton, New Brunswick, 4th of July, 1948.
Great. And could you give just a brief overview of your educational background?
Well, I grew up in Moncton and New Glasgow and attended public schools in both cities, and finally graduating from Moncton High in 1966, and well, actually, I took another year or two because they had a grade 13 program there,
oh, okay.
which is gone now. But I attended that, and then applied for St. Mary's for the fall of '68, and came here to do a 4-year Bachelor of Science. And after that, I was enrolled in the Canadian Navy, where, well, I guess my education sort of continued because it was all training in the Navy, and then just served in the submarine service until 1976, and then I went to work at Dalhousie in some administrative jobs in the bookstore, and then finally to St. Mary's
right.
in 1980, came
okay.
to St. Mary's to take over the bookstore.
So you've had a long career here at St. Mary's as well.
Pretty well. Education and then working here
yes.
starting in 1980, that's right.
So if you could take me back to 1968, to the fall of 1968, I'm interested in any memories that come to mind for you of what the university was like during that time and what your impressions were and anything that you
yeah.
can think of.
Well, my impressions of St. Mary's back in 1968, being a naive freshman, I
yes.
suppose, when I arrived on campus, of course, I had seen the campus before. I had visited the campus the summer before because I knew I wanted to apply to go here. So I sort of did a little walking tour of the campus. I didn't know much about the place, but...
Could I ask why you wanted to apply?
I was actually... at the time, I was actually... I had a girlfriend who was going to Mount St. Vincent Academy, the high school there.
Okay.
And we were both from Moncton, and really, when I was applying to universities in the Maritimes, it really didn't matter much to me, St. Effects, Mount Allison, you know, so I just said, well, I'll go to St. Mary's, and I could be in Halifax and spend a year with the girl I was going out with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came to St. Mary's in the fall of '68, and... you know, once I was accepted, I was quite happy with that.
Great.
You know? But, you know, back then, I can remember, for example, getting ready to come down to St. Mary's. I made sure I had, you know, nice clean clothes on, and I even got a haircut before I came down, you know. And
did
I
you
got
have
off,
long hair?
No, well, not really, but although in the late 60s, I mean, you know, the long hair was starting to, I mean, even in high school, kids were starting to grow longer hair, you
right.
know, like beetle type hair,
yes.
that sort of thing, you know. But I guess at the time, since I was interested in trying to get through university through the armed forces,
mm-hmm.
I was in appearance, I was probably trying to be a little more conservative
right.
than most students. So anyway, I can remember, you know, getting off the train, walking up English Street and getting on campus, and I was in for a bit of a shock right away because this was the late 60s, and
yes.
there was a lot of American influence at that time in Canadian universities, meaning you know, like it was the age of like the student revolution, right? The student protest,
yes.
Hippie influence, that
oh.
sort of thing. So I arrived on a campus where most of the students, or a lot of the students, were into the long hair and jeans, and I was saying, wow, this is not quite like Moncton High. So, you know, and of course we had American students here, and
right.
so
yes.
I, you know, I just quickly took off my tie and tried to look as casual as possible, and, you know, but I had no problems adjusting at all. You know, I was more than happy to, you know, just to live the casual life, and,
yes.
Because there had been dress codes at St. Mary's, being an all-male institution
right.
Previous to that, there were dress codes about, you know, wearing a sports coat and maybe a shirt and tie to class. Well, that ended before I got here, but I had heard, you know, that
mm-hmm.
those dress codes existed, so So in retrospect, I was actually quite happy that the university was sort of keeping up with the times, and the students were really, you know, embracing the casual look, you know, of the late 60s, you know, very, very typical at the time. So anyway, I was on a small campus at that time back in 68. The residences over here were just being built, the Vanier and Loyola residences. The stadium, they were dumping earth at the side of the field there to construct the stadium where the concrete seating is today.
Right,
you know.
Right.
That was all under construction. The science building, the student center here, they only had one floor here, the student center originally. And in 67, 68, that's when they built the five stories to the student center here. So there was a lot of construction going on. So that's what I really saw. I saw a campus in transition,
okay,
with a lot of physical building, you know, construction, that sort of thing. And that was in response to a really growing population.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a period of growth. So I became immersed in that kind of environment. That's
mm-hmm.
my recollections are of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that growth and the increased student population and all the development. So I was really one of the first students we were the first students to live in the low rise, as they call it, the Vanier residence.
Yes.
It was all men. And there were four sections, A, B, C, D house, you know. It was all new. And when we moved in, it was still under construction. They were still putting carpeting in the halls.
Wow.
We had no curtains on our windows or no trash cans. I mean, that all evolved in the first two or three or four weeks in September. When,
okay.
You know, there were guys doing drywalling and everything like that. So, you know, even our own residence was under construction, but it pretty well settled down, and I was a resident student for the first 2 years at St. Mary's. The second 2 years, I lived off campus in private houses, you know, apartments, that sort of thing, with some friends from Moncton. So, but I felt that the first 2 years in residence was actually pretty a good experience, because it kept me on campus,
right.
And I got involved in things going on around campus, you know, whether they were sporting events or maybe some of the societies and the student council, that sort of thing. And and of course it was easier to meet people too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
you're all living together in a small area over in residence, so you tend to develop a little network of friends from your area.
Sure.
And I think that helped too, you know.
Yes.
Instead of just living in downtown in an apartment, you know, and coming
That's
back
right.
and forth. I had a fairly good a good student experience the first couple of years,
mm-hmm.
I think, because of that. But I was taking science here and majoring in physics. So we were a small group. I think there were only three or four physics majors that graduated the year I graduated.
Wow.
In 72. So we were a small group. The physics department was a small department, and I think that. That sort of helped. Well, it helped me a lot. You know, have a close contact with the professors and the other students that were majoring in physics.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you sort of felt kind of special, and you weren't just one of 50 or 60 students majoring in a subject. You know, so yeah, that was a fairly positive experience.
That's
too.
Great.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And so. As you know, I'm interested in the arrival of women. So you arrived at the same time that women arrived on our campus.
Well, there were women enrolled at St. Mary's when I came. And I guess, you know, I mean, the university, I think originally they looked at the possibility of amalgamating with the Mount. But the Mount wanted to remain a women's university.
Yes.
And so St. Mary's did start enrolling women. There were few and far between when I was here, though.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, they weren't living on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can even remember, for example, on a weekend, we'd go down to dinner in the residence, and somebody would come back and say, oh, there's some women in the cafeteria. They were invited. They were invited, you know, as guests for dinner or something like that. So, I mean, the presence of of women on campus outside the classroom back then was, you know, it was kind of rare, except
really?
Unless it was a public event like a football game or
sure.
something. But, you know, like women in the residence or at any private functions was fairly rare. It didn't take long, as you probably know, for that to change.
Yes.
Though, just with the, you know, with the trend for more women to be attending university. You know, I mean, back then, the number of women attending university was a smaller percentage than it is today, obviously. I mean,
yes.
There's more women here now than men, actually. But,
right.
But back then, you know, we were the majority. And so all the years that I attended here as a student and then worked here, I just saw that evolve,
mm-hmm.
you know, to what it is, to what
mm-hmm.
it is today. So there were a lot of changes to be made, and there was a lot of adjusting, you know. But I think at St. Mary's, I think it was fairly positive,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the Jesuit influence at St. Mary's was waning at the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, because the Jesuits did give up their administrative and, you know, governance control of the university during those years.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, when I was at St. Mary's, there was still a Jesuit president, Father
mm-hmm.
LaBelle,
mm-hmm.
and then he was replaced in my second year, I think around 1970-71, Edmund Morris, who had been an administrator at St. Mary's, took over as interim president, and then after that, I believe it was Owen Carrigan,
yes.
who became president. So during my years at St. Mary's, I really saw the transition from presidents from the Jesuits to a secular president, and then I also saw the introduction of residence space on campus being dedicated for women's
right.
living space too. So all under the guidance of Elizabeth Chard,
right,
who was the dean of women. She was the first dean of women, because
yes.
women were assigned residence space. And you know, the university has never looked back.
Right.
You know, so
had to have a dean for
so
it.
So now, of course, it's just, I mean, it's totally co-educational. You know, there's no divisions in living space or anything. It's just you know, it's quite a, although they do have sections,
mm-hmm.
you know, but still, it's I think it was a good process.
So when you look back or think back, was it especially your first year, I suppose, did it still feel really like an all-male campus?
Oh, yes.
The numbers would have been so low.
Well, very much so.
Right,
very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, because like when I graduated, there was only one woman in my class. She was studying engineering, but she took physics and math courses, so you know, she was just one of us, you know.
What was her name? Again,
you know what, I could pick her out in the yearbook.
Yes, I may have her name. It starts with an S. Stringer or
no. Well, back in 72 when I graduated, there were a number of women.
Okay.
But if you look in the engineering,
yes.
Section of 72, or she might have finished in 73 after me. You know, she's the only woman that was in my the class the whole time I was at St. Mary, because I was taking math and physics classes, you know. So yeah, she was the only
only woman in your classes.
Yeah, 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 into smaller classes anyway.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
But you say you saw that change over the years that you were here as a student, though. By the time you graduated,
yeah,
it wouldn't have still felt like an all-male campus?
Less so.
Okay,
yeah.
You did see
a
distinct difference
by
definitely. The time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And in terms of the documentation that I would have researched, say the Journal and the St. Mary's Times and whatnot, in regards to the secularization of the university, there's very little. I mean, very little. There was lots of student protest, both pro and con for coeducation, but virtually nothing really about secularization. So can you recall anyone, you know, any discussion on campus around that, or did it just
seamlessly
happen?
You mean the control of the university,
yes.
Being given up by, you know, by the Jesuits? Well, I do recall for example, there was a lot of criticism in the student newspaper at the time, in the Journal. There was a lot of criticism of the administration. That was just a throwback to the American influence, really. I mean,
okay.
The American campuses were in turmoil. Canadian campuses, I mean, a lot of the more radical students love to pick up on that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the student the students who are running the newspaper would be the ones to pick up on it more than anyone.
Sure.
So they saw themselves as the journalists, the revolutionaries, the ones leading the, you know, the anti-administrative cause, you know.
Yes.
That was just the thing to do back then.
Right.
So in my second year, for example, I think when Father Lebel was president, the journal used to run articles, satirical articles on Father Lebel. I forget now. Oh yeah, they had this cartoon of Father Lebel, and they used to call him Mother Tucker. I don't know what the relationship was. I think it was Mother Tucker was a comic figure back then, or something in political satire or something. But
yeah,
they linked it to Father Lebel. But he was very, very upset about this, I only heard through the grapevine. Like, I didn't physically see him, you know, ranting and raving about it. But I heard, you know, through other different sources that it caused a lot of stress in his last year as president.
Did it?
He had a very difficult time coping with the articles in the journal that would criticize the administration, decisions that were made at the university, the academic programs, policies, university policies. I mean, the Jesuits ruled here for years.
Yes.
In administration without that type of critical feedback from students.
Right, right,
all of a
right.
sudden, all of a sudden, with the 60s and student protests and everything like that, it was all coming to the forefront. The student newspaper was especially very, very radical. I mean, remember the editor, his name was Smith. He looked like Bob Dylan. Not a long-haired, raving, you know, hippie type.
Yes.
But this guy had a very, very revolutionary mind in a student context, anyway, in student government context. And
right.
he just, you know, as editor of the journal, that was his vehicle.
Right.
To move his agenda forward, you know, his radical agenda. So it was all criticism of the administration and criticism of the academic programs, academic freedom, that sort of thing. I can remember different incidents at St. Mary's. One of them was a history professor, Dr. Sutherland, who was fired by the department or something, or let go for some reason because of his radical methods in the classroom, or whatever. I forget what the actual issue was, but the student newspaper, they picked up on this. They took his cause and just championed his cause. You know, they had sit-ins in front of the president's office over there, you know.
Wow.
Reinstate Professor Sutherland. That was the type of student protest that at least that you saw on the St. Mary's campus, and a lot of it had to do with the editors of the student newspaper. They're the ones that love to drive this little agenda. And then there were other...
Did they get him back in?
I think Sutherland did stay.
Okay.
He actually stayed. He eventually left, but not... I don't think he was forced out, you know, but he was reinstated. Other issues around the campus back then, typical student protests, protesting against the food on campus, for example. Now, I mean, that might have happened in an earlier age, too, but it was just the 60s, right? And so anything that the students didn't like on campus, they would protest. So I remember there was a big demonstration where the students all dumped their food in garbage cans out in their parking lot, you know.
Wow.
During the, this was, I think, 19, the food demonstration was around 1970, I think my second year. And yeah, it was just, it was great. And the other thing too was student politics. Now, it was the people who applied for the positions, you know, the student government, they were all men, okay? Although there were a few women on campus who were, you know, kind of outspoken in certain areas, but for the most part it was males who ran for positions on the student council.
During your time
and,
here.
Yeah, yeah, and there was a lot of debate around the election campaigns back then, because that tied in with the age of the student protests of the late 60s and early 70s too. Okay, I mean that just played into it, and I can remember lots of interesting interviews and press conferences, even around the student elections.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today
mm-hmm.
today is very formal. Today, mm-hmm. like the students, well, of course, you know, the student council is like a corporation.
Yes, yes, that's
and,
right.
The elections are almost like a federal election or a provincial election.
Oh, right.
They try to follow the same protocols, but back then, you know, these students running for council positions, they saw themselves as radicals,
right.
You know, and they wanted to get into student government. And
yes.
So they had all kinds of really neat press conferences and debates, and you know, there was a lot of back and forth between the conservatives on campus and the radicals, the
yes.
left-wingers and all that. It made for really interesting times. And of course, I sort of came in naive. I didn't come in as the, you know, the streetwise student radical. I was pretty naive. I was fairly conservative, you know, but I loved all this. I thought it was great. You know, I loved to see the long-haired bearded guy running for president or running for student council, you know, and out there shouting against the administration and the changes that have to occur in student life and all that stuff. You know, I just thought it was great. But I was enrolled in the Armed Forces because they were paying my way through university. So
right.
I was like a,
yes.
Technically I was an officer cadet in the Armed Forces.
Oh, okay? Right.
So yeah, so I was going to a civilian university though. I didn't go to the Canadian Military College.
Yes.
Okay. They had a program where if you were already enrolled in Canadian university, you could finish off your time
mm-hmm.
at a civilian university. So and then just do your training in the summer. So that's what I was, what they call the CIVI-U types in the Armed Forces. So I enjoyed just being a regular student during the year, and then I joined all the other RMC types during the summer for training.
Great.
So, yeah. So that was, but that was a lot of fun back then.
Right.
You know, it was a lot of fun.
Oh,
yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you can think of about your time here in those days that might be relevant or?
I do remember getting involved in a committee on campus, a student committee for CUSO, which was then known as the Canadian University Service Overseas.
Okay.
And I just sort of fell into it after a professor asked me one day if I'd be interested in serving on this committee. And so I learned about the organization, where they used to send volunteers to third world countries, you know,
mm-hmm.
after graduation.
Yes.
So I became a student representative of that society on campus. And, you know, we would keep up with what was going on nationally. And we would try to promote CUSO on campus, try to educate students about the possibility of applying for a CUSO scholarship or a CUSO assignment
right.
after university through this national organization.
Yes.
So I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, I actually ended up marrying a woman who had been to CUSO, been teaching in Jamaica and in Nigeria for two CUSO assignments after university. And
was she St. Mary's?
No, she was in Ottawa, and I didn't meet her until after her assignments, and she came back to Halifax, and
okay.
you know, we met in Halifax. But yeah, that was just that was one student activity I was involved in,
okay.
You know, during my time here at St. Mary's. But I must admit the transition at St. Mary's from an all male university to what we'd call, you know, a co-ed university, and then from the Jesuit institutional
yes.
Model to the secular, it was accepted. People just knew that the time had come,
right.
And so it evolved without a lot of resistance. There might have been a few pockets of resistance among, you know, diehard conservatives who thought that traditions were being lost.
Mm-hmm.
But in actual fact, I think most of the changes that came about with more women on campus and fewer Jesuits and more more of a secular institution, it was something that was accepted and really it was promoted because of that. I think it made the transition a lot easier.
Right,
a lot
right.
easier at the time, you know.
Yeah, I've heard that before, and yeah. I would agree based on my research to date
yeah.
that there were some pockets of resistance, but overall,
yeah.
many of the Jesuits welcomed the women on campus as well. That some
yeah,
of our
yeah, that's true. You know, I think one of the most telling interviews in that is Father William Stewart,
yes.
a long rambling interview that he did with somebody that you know that eventually put it in the archives. But and of course he was very conservative too, but he had a lot of insight, and you know, if you can read between the lines, he eventually saw it as a good thing. You know, he was open-minded, and I think most of the Jesuits were too.
Mm-hmm.
They just knew that the time was coming,
mm-hmm.
and so, well, of course there were fewer vocations back then too. I mean, they could look ahead and see that the time was coming when they wouldn't be able to staff the university with Jesuit teachers.
Right, right.
So I think really that had a lot to do with it too.
Would you, in your estimation, would you think that any of the changes going on at the same time with Vatican II would have had any impact on the changes at St. Mary's and other traditional Roman Catholic universities?
I saw some of the changes directly insofar as that I was raised in a Catholic family, and when I came to St. Mary's, of course, I didn't always go to church on Sunday, but I think I can remember the first time I attended church services at St. Mary's in 1968, and then later on in 1972, I saw a lot of differences. The parish church, Canadian Martyrs Church on campus,
mm-hmm.
of course, that was our link to
mm-hmm.
to the Catholic Church on campus, and I saw. I saw a lot of a lot of changes in the way the services were conducted on campus.
Okay.
And I wasn't really doing a lot of studying back then of the changes in Vatican II, because I was just a typical sort of fallen away Catholic during my years at St. Mary's.
Yes.
But at the same time, I could see a lot of the changes that were occurring, in the parish that was located on the campus here.
Right, right.
Yeah.
When I, back to some of your earlier comments, it's of interest to me that I had interviewed the first female lay faculty member at Mount St. Vincent, and she too spoke of the sort of difficulty that the Sisters of Charity would have had, similar to what you've described with the Jesuits, with student resistance and student voice and critical of the administration, and that they had to deal with that as well.
Yeah, because that was a new model.
Yeah, right.
And they had been so used to the the complacent students who followed instructions and didn't voice a lot of contrary opinions and that type of thing. So they found it hard to deal with. It was a almost an insult to their their complacency, I think, that was developed over the years.
Right.
It was just a given that the students under them would be
compliant,
good, proper. So when they saw that change, when they saw that resistance, their world was sort of falling apart. And like I say, with the situation here with Father LaBelle, I understand he almost had a nervous breakdown.
Right.
The stress was so strong, from everything he read in the student paper and everything
right.
he heard the students going on. He said, what's St. Mary's coming to? Who are these students?
Yes.
This new generation of students. He couldn't connect. He couldn't cope.
Yeah.
Mind you, even the secular presidents probably had problems too,
mm-hmm.
but not as big as the Jesuits, who had to change their whole
yes.
outlook.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
To administration and teaching.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Is there anything? I mean, if something else came to mind, we can always revisit again and meet again. But
yeah.
would there be anything else that you can think of that?
Well, the fact that I've been at St. Mary's the last 30 years as bookstore manager,
yes.
I really have seen the campus evolve in comparison to my 4 years here as a
right.
student. It hasn't been a shock. It's been a gradual change over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
From the day I graduated until now. I sort of witnessed the evolution of the campus.
Yes.
I had time to absorb the changes, and for the most part, I could see how decisions were being made, and also how the academic programs were being enhanced, and how the physical plant was changing, and the student makeup, the introduction of
yes.
continuing education programs,
right.
Minorities, more minorities, more foreign students, the presence of these foreign students in special programs.
Yes.
All of these changes, I mean, they didn't happen overnight,
no.
but they evolved over the years, and you know, really for the good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely for the good. Yeah.
No, you've had a wonderfully well-rounded experience with St. Mary's from your time as a student to now.
I think anybody spending 30 years at St. Mary's, say from 1940 to 1960, and then you compare 1970 to 2010 or whatever, I mean, change was much more rapid and ongoing than in previous decades. So
you've seen a lot.
That's true.
That's great. Well, if anything else comes to mind, you've certainly provided me with wonderful insight into
your time here.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm sure I can. Okay. And I thank you very much, and I'm just going to conclude the tape here.